Okay, we're starting here on the two dots towards the bottom of Ayin Zayin Mud Bet. The Gemara here is quoting the Mishnah, Mitzri Vadomi, Einan Asurin. They are not Isur Olam. They're only up three generations. But we had a question about the women with regards to a Mitzrit and a Domit. What is her status? Rabbi Shimon says it's a Kal V'chomer. If by Amoni and Moavi, the woman is Muteret, even though they're Asurim Isur Olam, then certainly by a Mitzrit and Adomit, where they are only Asur L'Shlosh Dorot, then if for certain they should be able to be okay right away. So my tshuva, Chachamim say that if that's your Kal V'chomer, we have an answer to that Kal V'chomer. Amar Rabbi Bachan, Amar Rabbi Yochan, Mishum Deikul Meimar, Arayot Yochichu, Shlo Asar Behen Ela Ad Shlosha Dorot. Arayot only have application up until three generations. That's because if you look at the individual themselves, then the Arayot that are mentioned by the Torah go to their children, their parents, and then go down to their grandchildren and grandparents. So there are only three generations worth of Isurim that surround the Arayot. But there, nevertheless, Echad Zecharim ve'Echad Nekevot. There's no differentiation between males and females. A grandson, a granddaughter through a son and a granddaughter through a daughter have the same status. Mala Arayot Shekein Karet. What about the fact that Arayot are in a different category? They have a punishment of Karet. So how do you bring evidence from that? Mamzer Yochiach. So what about the fact that a mamzer is permanently excluded from the kal? Before we said that it made no difference if they were zakar in the keva. Arayot yochicho. Then you bring arayot to prove the other side of this, which is v'chazar adin. Lo reizek reizev, lo reizek reizev. Neither of them are the same. But at tzadish aveshavan, the common denominator between arayot and mamzer is shasurim. V'achad zecharim v'achad nekovot. So they, number one is they have an Isur. Number two is that males and females are not differentiated. So I'll do the same thing by a Mitzri or Mitzrit and say that there should be Zachar Nekeva, no differentiation. And this is the response to Rabbi Shimon's Kal V'chomer. Gemara says, there is some common denominator between them, which is that they have a tinge of Karet in them. Obviously, Arayot are an Isur Karet. Mamzer is produced through an Isur Karet. You can only create a Mamzer if someone has a Biasura, that it's a Surah Bi Karet. So therefore, you have here a problem, which is that common denominator will not allow you to learn to Mitzrit and Adomit, because that's only an Isur Asay. That's not an Isur Karet. So Gemara says, Rabbonon Michalal Dechayve Asay. The Rabbonon learned out from a Halal that is produced by a Chayve Asay. It's a Machloket that we saw earlier in the Masechta, Ukra Belezer Ben Yaakov. Whether you can produce a halal only through Isurei Kehuna, which are Lavin, or can you produce a halal from Isurei Kehuna, that's a mitzvah to say. By the Kohen Gadol, there's a mitzvah to say that he betula mi'amav ikach, that he has to take a betula. So that's an Isur Asay that is generated over there. If the Kohen Gadol marries such a woman, and it's only in violation of an Asay, does he produce a halal? So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says yes. If we take halal from Chayavei Asay, together with Arayot, then we're able to prove that the common denominator between these two things is, number one, echad zecharim v'echad nekevot, no differentiation between zecharim and nekevot. Number two is, it comes from arayot, you say zechiyuv karet, no problem, we're talking about an asay by halal. And if you talk about mal halal, so that yitzirato be'aveira, a halal which is produced through an aveira, lefikach, maybe we're going to say that that's made an asay nekevot kezecharim, Arayot, yochicho, shein yitziratam be'aveira. Arayot will prove because there, the arayot are surot, even though they were not created through any isur. Meaning that the daughter, the son, the grandson, the granddaughter are all asurim, but there was nothing wrong with their creation or their status. Their status is perfectly kasher. It's just vis-a-vis this individual, they are arayot. So therefore that will be mochiach. Between the two of them, I'll prove to you that again, echad zecharim echad nekevot, that both are asurim when there is an isur. That's irrelevant if it's an Isur Asay or an Isur Karet, because I'm using Halal from Mitzvah Asay and I'm using Arayot. So the common denominator between them would say that anytime you have an Isur, the Isur is equally applicable to males and females. So Rabbi Shimon responds to them low-key when Rabbi Shimon responds to the Chachamim. Umay low-key. What does that mean low-key? Hachikamar lehu. Lididi lo svir lehi Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. First of all, I don't hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that you can have a Halal from Mitzvah Asay. On the other hand, the other opinions are you can only generate a halal from an isur, from a lav. Now, once you've done that, you lose the whole tzad shavehen because then if you produce a halal from a lav and you connect that with arayot, the common denominator between those two is that they're mitzvot lo taseh. And Adomi and Mitzri are mitzvot aseh, so you can't learn from that. You can't prove anything from the combination of an Isur halal that comes from El Isur lav and from arayot. Somebody says, Ledidchu, according to you, the Sfir Luka Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, for you who do hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore you have this tzada shaveh, halacha ni omer. Then I have a mesora, halacha lemoshe misinai, that Mitzri and an Edomit are excluded. Tanya, Amarlan Rabbi Shimon, halacha ni omer, ve'od mikra misayeni, banim velo banot. Says number one, I have a mesora, and number two is the pasuk itself supports me because it says, banim ashe yivaldulem, that says banim, and not banot. It says that the male children are problematic, not the female children, even though the word banim in Hebrew can mean children in the plural sense, can mean boys and girls, or just boys. He's focusing on it saying banim, therefore velo banot. Tanu banan. Banim velo banot, divi Rabbi Shimon. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Arei Omer, banim ashe yivaldu lahem dor shlishi, hakatuv tlan b'lei da. The Torah connects it to yivaldu, to leida, and not to the fact that it's banim. So connecting it to leida says that it's irrespective of whether it's a zachar and a keva. Anybody that you give birth to is problematic. So now Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lav damar Rabbi Yehuda katuv talan b'leida." If the Rabbi Yehuda had not made this statement that the pasuk was dependent on giving birth, lo matzei yadav ragalav beit midrash, he would not have been able to hold water in the beit midrash. Because he has another opinion which would have caused the problem, which is Kevin Damar Mar Kal Gerimi Krei Kal. So this is something we saw earlier in the Masechta. Again, a machloket as to whether Gerim are considered to be a Kahal. So that all the restrictions of Lo Yavo Bikal Hashem, do they have that status? Do they have a status of Kahal? So Rabbi Yehuda says they do have a status of Kahal, Gerim. So now, if you put these two things together, which is you have Kahal, number one, that Gerim are considered to be Kahal. Number two, if you believe that a Mitzrit and an Adomit are Mutarim, then that means that they are Gerim that can marry into Klal Yisrael. That means that they are Kahal. Now you have a problem, which is Mitzri Sheni, but Mayi Taher. A Mitzri Sheni, how will he ever be Mitaher? We say that a third generation Mitzri is no longer problematic. How are you ever going to get to a Mitzri Shlishi? Because what happens is you have a first generation Mitzri and Mitzrit, so they convert. So technically they could be mutarim with each other. But then, even in the first generation, it might be problematic. But then Mitzrit and Adomit are considered to be mutarim leklal Yisrael. They're mutarim leklal Yisrael. And Rabbi Yehuda says Kaal Gerim is called a Kaal. The Mitzri Sheni, who's he going to marry? There's going to be nobody that's going to be mutar for him to marry because the women from his same lineage, whether that's Mitzri or Adomit, they're already mutarim b'Yisrael. They're part of the Kaal. It's a sewer for them to marry this Mitzri Sheni. So how is a Mitzri Shlishi ever going to be produced that is going to be mutar if the Mitzri Sheni has nobody he can marry? Anybody he can marry is problematic and will not produce a Mitzri Shlishi. And so that's what it means, that if Rabbi Yehuda's opinion had been that the women are mutarot, like Rabbi Shimon, and together with his opinion that Gerim are considered to be a Kahal, then you'd never end up with a Mitzri Shlishi. But Rabbi Yehuda now is consistent in his opinion because he says that Mitzrit and Adomit are problematic. By being problematic means that they're not part of Kahal, and then you can have the Mitzri marry the Mitzrit, and then you won't have an issue. So that's why he had to have these two shito together. Otherwise, that's what it says, Lo Matzei Yadav Raglav Beit HaMidrash. His opinion would have created a problem whereby you wouldn't be able to come out with the Torah's statement about a Dor Shlishi. How could you ever have a Mitzri that's a Dor Shlishi? If you look in the top Tosfot over here, he already discusses the possibility of getting around this problem and how he could be Mitaher and Mitzri Sheni because he has other options of people to marry. Okay, he tries to give answers, but the Rishonim point out that there are multiple solutions to this problem, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan's statement is not so exacting because there are other options for this Mitzri Sheni in order to be Mitaher himself. So Gemara says, no problem. Di'avar Benosif. He does an Isur and marries a Bat Yisrael. So he'll marry a Bat Yisrael and the next child will be a Mitzri Shlishi. Where it says, D'ilok Tivkra. First of all, the Torah doesn't talk about cases that are B'diavad. The Torah doesn't talk about a case, okay, you can have a Mitzri Shlishi if you marry a Bat Yisrael B'Isur. That's not what the Torah is going to describe. That makes no sense. So Mar says, no, Vari Mamzer, D'i V'kadvei, Kra. Says, what about a mamzer? A mamzer is a product of a problematic relationship, and yet the Torah writes it. Mar says, Dili sura katov, Dila hetera lo katov. That's very different. There, the mamzer is a product of a problematic relationship, and he himself is a problem of isur. So that's why the Torah speaks about it, because it talks about his status. His status as being problematic. But over here, the Torah is not going to tell you about someone whose status is mutar, which is dor shlishi is mutar, from a product of a problematic relationship. Oh, sure, if you do this wrong thing, then you'll have a child that's okay. That the Torah doesn't speak about. Tumar says, what about Harei Makzir Grushato? The case of Makzir Grushato, if you remember from earlier in the Masechta, there it says that she is Toivahi, and there the Gemara learned that she is a Toivah, but her children are not Toivot. So over there we see that the Torah is addressing the heter of the children, even though it's done with a violation. I mean, he's Makzir Grushato after she married a third party. He's Makzir Grushato, which is Asur. And yet the Torah is telling you that she's only problematic, not her children. So we see there's het there, even though there's a Isur created here. Gemara says that that's a De'ila Hetera of a Katve. That's a Hetera, and it's written. It says, Hata Mishum De'ikar Isura Ho De Katve. The reason it's written there is not to tell you that the children are Mutarot, but rather to tell you that the woman herself is a Toeva, that she's not allowed to do that. A Diuk out of the fact that she is problematic is that the children are okay. But that's not the Ikar reason to write it. The Ikar reason to write it is because she is problematic. She's not allowed to go back to her husband, and she is a Toeva. As a derivative of her being a Toeva, we know that her children are not Toevot. But that's separate from the key element of what's written there. It's written there, Leisur. So therefore, that's the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, that if it were not for the fact that Rabbi Yehuda did not hold like Rabbi Shimon over here, then if you put his two opinions together, you'd run into a problem of producing a Mitzri Shlishi. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda has to say, number one, that Mitzrit and Adomit are just as Asur as a Mitzri and an Adomi. And in addition to that, he also holds that Kal Gerim is a Kahal. But the two will not cause a problem now because the Mitzrit and Adomit are Asurot. Since they're Asurot, they can marry. And once they marry, they'll produce a Mitzri Shlishi because they are not Mutarim Lavo Bakal. All right. Tan Rabbanan. Im ne'amar banim, lama ne'amar dorot. So if it mentions banim, children already imply, lineage. Why does it mention the word dorot? So it says, banim ashi valdu lahem, dor shlishi. So why does it say banim, and why does it say dor? It seems to be repetitive in the sense that banim includes that there'll be generations, and dor is also generations. So Gemara says, v'im ne'amar dorot, lama ne'amar banim. Or if you just wrote the word dorot, why do you have to write banim? Zim nemer banim v'lomer dorot. Had it just written banim and not dorot, ta'iti omer ben rishom sheni asur shlishi mutar. I would have thought it's not about child, grandchild, great-grandchild that way. I would have said that it means first child, second child, third child. A mitzri who converts, his first two children will be problematic. The third child born to him will be okay to go into the cow. That's what banim. So banim would be the banim ashi yivaldu lahem shlishi. The children that are born to them, the third child, will be mutar. The kach nemar dorot. Dorot comes to teach you that it's not about a single individual, but you're actually dropping generations. V'im nemar dorot. Had you just written the word dorot, v'lo nemar banim, haytomer lo tana umdim al har Sinai. I would have said that has to do with the people standing at Har Sinai. Because it says, dor shlishi, yavoenu. Who's dor shlishi? It would seem that it's referencing the Jews that are standing at Har Sinai and say, dor shlishi. By the time you get to your grandchildren, they'll be allowed to marry the converts that are from Mitzrayim. So there it says banim. Banim is a reference to the children of the Mitzrayim, and that it's not about Har Sinai. Kach nemar, banim. So therefore it tells you banim. Now the word lahem appears twice in the pasuk, and therefore the Gemara here darshan saying, it says lahem, mehem minei. First of all, lahem means banim asher yivaldu lahem. The children are born to them means that where's the start of the count? The count starts from the Mitzri himself, the convert himself, not like we said before, from Har Sinai or from the Jewish side. It's from the convert himself. That's where it starts from. That's what lahem means. Menei, mehem, menei. Number two is there's another word lahem in the pasuk. It says lahem, haleich achar psulam. That to teach you that you go after the most pasul. So for instance, if you have a Mitzri sheni that marries a Mitzri rishona, then the child will be a Mitzri sheni. You go after, if you take the choice, you took the two parties, you look at the one who's more pasul, and they dictate what the child's status is. So whenever you have psul in the man and in the woman, you look at which is the worst of the two scenarios, and that's the status of the child. V'itzrech lemichtav lahem, v'itzrech lemichtav asher yivaldu. We need the word lahem, and we need the word yishavaldu. Ikatav rachmana sheyivaldu havamina mi bneihem. Then I would have thought it starts from their children. Asheyivaldu means that the counting of the three generations only starts from their children. So you'll count three generations, not from them. They won't be the first generation Mitzri. First generation Mitzri will be their children. Asheyivaldu lahem. That is born. Those that are born will be first generation. Grandchild will be second generation. Great-grandchild will be third generation. So therefore, katab rachmana lahem. So that we wrote lahem, so say not mi b'nehem minei, but rather lahem minei, from them. They themselves are the first generation. That means their first generation, their child is second generation, their grandchild is third generation, will be mutar. Vi katab rachmana lahem, had the puzzle just written lahem, avimina mitzrit, mi'uberet shinit gaira. If you have a mitzrit who is pregnant when she converts, he, v'ubna chad, we would only count that her and her child as a single generation. Therefore, katar chumana sheyivaldu, to teach you that any child that is born after she converts already counts as a second generation, not as a first generation. Now, v'itzrich lemichtiv lahem hocha. He has to write lahem by the mitzri and adumi. V'itzrich lemichtiv lo gabi mamzer. And also by mamzer we have the word lo, which also indicates that just like the lahem over here, it goes aleich achar psulan. So too the lo that goes by mamzer also means aleich achar psulan. But why do you need it in both places? Right in one place, and we'll know that you always go after the more pasul of the members. Dika davrachmana hochov had it only written by mitzri and adumi mishum deba mitipa psula. That's because he's a product of a tipa psula. He wasn't born Jewish, and therefore he has the problem here in terms of the pasul, yoter pasul amongst them. Ava mamzer deba mitipa kshira. The mamzer who is technically born Jewish, he is, both parties are fine parties that came together. It just happens to be that they're rayot, and that's what produced the mamzer. But each party independently is a kasher. Same alo. So maybe over there we would not say, if you just wrote it by a mamzer, maybe there we'd still go after the pasul because he's an extreme pasul. He never can be made mutar. A mamzer is a permanent status. Of a hocha by Adomi and Mitzri, where it's only three generations, maybe there we would say Yamalo. Maybe we would say over there it's fine. So Tzricha, therefore we wrote by both of them that you go after the most pasul. So therefore if you have a mamzer and something else, they'll become a mamzer. You have a Mitzri Sheni, Mitzri Rishon. The Mitzri Rishon is what dictates. So you always go after the more pasul amongst them. Amar Rabba Barchano, Amar Rab Yochanan. Mitzri Sheni, Shenatsa Mitzrit Rishona, Bina Shlishi. So now we have a statement, Rabbi Barbarchana, the name of Yochanan, that if you have a Mitzri Sheni that marries a Mitzrit Rishona, Bina Shlishi Avai, their child is a third generation Mitzri, which is against what we just said before. But more importantly, we're going to see there are a number of memorials brought in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that seem to be Soter, and we're trying to figure out who has the right Mesora from Rabbi Yochanan. Alma Kasavar, Batar Didesha Dinanle. What you see from Rabbi Yochanan is that it always goes after the male. We ignore the female status, we look at the male status, and he is a Mitzri Sheni, therefore the child is a Mitzri Shlishi. Major Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yecholin Mamzerim Litaher. I have a way to cleanse Mamzerim, to remove their status of Mamzer. How do I remove? If they're going to marry a Mamzer, marrying a Mamzeret, all you're going to have is more Mamzerim. How do you cleanse a Mamzer? How do you have them not be a Mamzer anymore? He says, Ketzet. Mamzer nasa shivcha. The mamzer will marry a shivcha kananit. Havlad eved. The child is an eved kanani then. Shechuru. Then they will free him. The master will free him. Nimsa ben chorin. Then you'll be a free man. And now he's no longer a mamzer. But what you see over there is that the mamzer is a male. The shivcha kananit is a female. And the status of the child is determined by the mother, not by the father, by the female, not the male. So Amar Bata Didosha Dinanle. You see that we go after the mother, not after the father. Rabbi Yochanan just said, oh, we always go after the father. Here you see we go after the mother. So Shani Otam Damar Kro. Right, that's different by the Shivcha Kananit, because the Pasuk specifically dictates Aishavi Ladeh Tiyele Adunah, that the woman and the children belong to her master. But that shows you that by an Eved Ivri, that the woman's status is what dictates over here. The Shivcha Kananit is always the one with status. This Mamzer is no worse than an Eved Ivri, he's a Jew. He's a full-fledged Jew, he's marrying a Shifa Kananit. In those cases, the Aisha Viladeh Tehela Dunah is evidence of the fact that we follow the woman in that specific case. What Rabbi Tarfon is saying is that we can't have both. He doesn't take on the psulim of both parents. You have to pick which parent is going to grant him that status. So over here, if the Shifcha Kananit dictates, then the Mamzer is out of the picture, and that's what he's saying here. There's no Yichus. What that basically says, and we learned this early in the Masechta, is that children born from an Eved Ivri to a Shifcha Kananit, they have no Yichus to that Eved Ivri. That Eved Ivri doesn't accomplish Purvu with that. I mean, that there's no Yichus between the father and these children. It all belongs to the mother. But here you see that the mother dictates, but Torah Gemara says no, but that's because in that specific case, we have a pasuk that says they're dictated by the mother. In other cases, Rabbi Yochanan believes that it's all dictated by the father. And so therefore, no matter what the mother's status is, whatever the father is, that's going to dictate the psul of the child. Meiti Rava, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, we just quoted this last week, which is Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Min Yamin Ger Mitzri Ayali Chaver Mitamidei Rabbi Akiva. I had this buddy, Min Yamin, the Ger Mitzri, who is a Talmud, one of the students of Rabbi Akiva, just like Rabbi Yehuda was. And he used to say, Ani Mitzri Rishon, Minasati Mitzri Rishona. I'm a first generation Mitzri convert, and I married a woman who is a Mitzri Rishona. Asili Bni Mitzri Shnia. I'm gonna have my child, who's a Mitzri Sheni, marry a woman who's a Mitzri Shnia. Kadeshi Ben Bini Roi Lavob Kal, so that my grandchild is cleared of all problems, and he can marry into the Kal. Visa Kadatcha Batredi Desha Dinanai. If you say that it all goes after the father's, right, the patrilineal descent here in terms of the psul, I feel a Rishona Nami. Then why does his son have to marry a Mitzri Shnia? You let him marry a Mitzri Rishona. It's irrelevant who his son marries. As long as his son marries someone that he's mutar to marry, then it's going to produce a Mitzri Shlishi. So why was he so worried about marrying his child to a Mitzri Shnia? So it says, Amar Lei Rabbi Yochanan Natano Tnei Rishona. So Rabbi Yochanan said to whoever was telling over this story about this Tosefta that has this story about Minyamin Ger Mitzri, he says, don't say Mitzri Shnia. Say Mitzrit Rishona. Emend the Brayta, emend the Tosefta to say Rishona, not Shnia. So he said, no, I'll make sure that my child marries either Mitzrit Rishona or Shnia, and that's how I'll have a Mitzrit Shlishit. So they amend the Brayta not to be problematic for his statement. Now we have another Mesorah in Rabbi Yochanan, which is Ki'ata Rabdimi. So you can see here you have Mesorot that are coming to Bavel from Rabbi Yochanan, and we're getting different messages about them. And this one is Ki'ata Rabdimi on Rabbi Yochanan. Mitzri Sheni Shenasa Mitzrit Rishona Bna Sheni Havai. That a Mitzri Sheni that marries a Mitzrit Rishona, the child is a Mitzri Sheni. Again, it argues on what Rabbi Yochanan said before. Alma Batar Yimesha Dinanai. So here you see it goes after the mother. It's matrilineal when it comes to these psulim. Similarly, Abaye Elahad Amar Rabbi Yochanan. What are you going to do with this statement of Rabbi Yochanan? Hifrish Chatat Mi'uberet. If a person designates an animal to be a chatat, but the animal happens to be pregnant, v'yalda, and then it gives birth, ratza mitchaper ba, ratza mitchaper bevlada. You have a choice. You can be mitchaper with the mother, or you can be mitchaper with the child. Iamart bishlama ubar lav yerechimo. If you conclude that a fetus is not an extension of the mother, I mean it's a separate entity, then that makes sense. So, havale kimafrish te chataot achrayut. Then it's as if you at first took two chataot lachrayut, which you're allowed to do. You're allowed to say, here, I'm designating these two animals to be my chatat, because if I lose one or something happens to one of them, I'll use the other one. I get to choose which one. In that case, that's totally fine. And then, when you do that, you have a basically a backup chatat. You use one of them. And the second one goes out to graze, it gets a moment, and then you take the proceeds and use those proceeds to buy another chatat. But, if you say that an ubar is an extension of the mother, meaning that they are one entity, vlad chatat, then this is a child or an offspring of a chatat. Vlad chatat the mito. Right, we have alocha the moshe misinai. There are four or five chataot that are metot. And one of those chatot metot is vlad chatat. The other one is chatat shnit chabru balea. The other one is a chatat that the owners already got a kapara from. So here you have both of those situations. You have, number one, it's a vlad chatat. Number two is that if they use one of them, then the other one is a chatat shnit chabru balea. The vlad chatat zmita azil, ishtik. He didn't have any response to that. Now he has a problem because does Rabbi Yochanan really think ubar yerechimo or not? Amarlei dilma shiny hotom. Maybe it's different by the Mitzri, because dichtiv asher yivaldu, that are born, akatuv tlo b'leida, that the pasuk says it's conditioned on birth. Amalei karkafno chacham chazik reishech beni amudei. I see your head amongst the pillars. Pillars refers to the Beit Midrash. The way Rashi says it is I see you amongst those that are gores, meaning amongst those chashuvei of the Talmidei Chachamim, based on what you just said. Tosfot says that Chazita Reishech Ben Amudei Perish Rabbecha, your Rebbe, Dematzinu Rabbo Shalach Lemol Lifnei Rabbi Yochanan. Abai's Rebbe is Rabbo, and we know that Rabbo learnt by Rabbi Yochanan. I saw your Rebbe's head amongst those that were Rabbi Yochanan, so that maybe you got it from your Rebbe, maybe this is the Mesorah that you have about Rabbi Yochanan, but that is the right way to explain it. So Karkafna means a big head. Now a big head can be explained in one of two ways. It could be a description of the character trait of Abaye, or it can be a figurative. The big head means this is a Adam Chashuv, the person who is a Talmud Chochom. And that's the way that Rashi and Tosafot take it. Just that Rashi thinks that it's referencing to Abaye himself, whereas Tosafot says it's referencing to Rabbo Abaye's Rebbe. Although that's somewhat difficult because it's not clear that Rabbo was ever in Eretz Yisrael and that Rabbo really was by the shear of Rabbi Yochanan. And so therefore it's more likely that he's either speaking to Abaye directly about Abaye himself, or he's speaking about Rabbo, but not that Rabbo physically went there, but in Derech Melitza, he's saying about his Rebbe, that Rabbo is as if his Rebbe Rabbo was there with Rabbi Yochanan. When Rabbi Yochanan said this over, he said, it says that those that gave birth, Haba Almo, Botar Avu Asha Dinanle. That means in general, we follow the father. I mean, this is an exception to the rule. This is not the rule. So that when it says, Ashe Yevaldu, it teaches us that it all goes after the one who gives birth. That is the Nekeva. So by a Mitzrit and by an Edomit, there, they are the determining factor. So it's the woman that's the determining factor in those situations. But in general, it will go after the male. There'll be patrilineal descent. So now we have two pieces to this Rabbi Yochanan statement. One is that Mitzri Sheni, Shenasa Mitzri Rishona, Bna, Sheni Havai, that this child is considered to be a second generation. It goes after the mother. A matrilineal decision about this, or about the psul. We say that because the pasuk says, Ashei Yivaldu, that it's about Leida, and therefore goes after the female. But in other situations of psul, we're going to follow the male and not the female, obviously with the exception of Shifka Knanit, where again, we have a pasuk that dictates that it goes after the mother. That's number one. Number two is, we have this statement, Rabbi Yochanan, that a chatat mi'uberet, when you have a chatat that is pregnant, that it must be that ubar is alav er yerachimo, that the ubar is considered to be separate from the mother, independent of the mother, because otherwise you'll have a problem of why is this not considered to be a vlad chatat? It's why isn't this the child of a chatat which would go to mitah? The fact that Rabbi Yochanan says when you take a pregnant chatat, that it's considered as if you were mafrish two separate chataot, if they're two separate animals, then you can be mafrish lachayut. And that's what he did over here. Now, the reason that these two are correlated is, how do we look at the ubar vis-a-vis the mother? So, are they considered to be one entity, or are they considered to be separate entities? If they're separate entities, then you could have suggested that a baby that's inside can be dictated by the father and not by the mother. If you say it's an extension of the mother, and ubar is erachimo, then you would have to argue that whatever the mother gives birth to, that's the creation, that is the status of the child. But if you say that the ubar exists independently of the mother, then you could have argued that the father could determine the lineage of the child. And what the problem was that Rabbi Yochanan over there says ubar is lav yerachimo, yet over here he's saying that it's being dictated by the mother. So how do we reconcile those two? So the answer was that this is an exception to the rule. The reason is, you're right, generally ubar is lav yerachimo, and therefore the father dictates the status of the child. Why is it over here by Mitzri that it's different? Because of Ashei Yivaldu. We have a pasuk that says that the mother dictates over here. But otherwise we believe that Ubar is Lav Yerachimo. Now the Gemara continues and says, okay, but that presents a problem here, which is Alaha Damarova, Nachrit Mi'uberet Shenit Gaira. You have a Nachrit who is pregnant that converts. Bno Ein Tzarich Tfila. While she's pregnant, she converts. So when she converts, a woman has to go to the mikveh in order to convert. She went to the mikveh. Does the baby that's born later have to go to the mikveh? Or is that baby covered by the mother went to the mikveh? The answer, according to Rav, is no more mikveh because the mother covered the baby. Am I ein tzarich tefila? Why doesn't the baby need a tefila? If you say ubar yerechimo, if you say that the fetus is an extension of the mother, then I understand why he doesn't need a tefila, because the mother's tefila took care of both of them. But if you say like Rabbi Yochanan that ubar is lav yerechimo, that it's a separate entity, how is it possible that this tefila covers the baby? If you're going to say it's because of Rabbi Yitzchak, Dam Rabbi Yitzchak, Dvar Torah Ruba, Umakpid Alav Chutzeitz, that only when it's a rove that is Chutzeitz, plus your Makpid, that it's Chutzeitz, Rubo She'enu Makpid Alav, Enu Chutzeitz, but if it's a rove of a Chatzitza, but you're not Makpid on it, then it's not Chutzeitz. So that's what they're going to say over here, that by the Ubar, it's a Rubo, yeah, there's a Chatzitza of the mother, between the mother and the water, but not makpid on it. That chatzitza is not something you're makpid on, so therefore, the tefillah is a good tefillah for the baby, for the ubar. So the Gemara says that, Amar Rav Kahana, lo shanu ela rubo. That's only if you have rubo, at least something got into the mikveh. Over here, aval kulo chotzeitz, if there's no contact with the mikveh at all, meaning that you can't say that something's not a chatzitza when it's completely enveloped. It's completely enveloped, it's clearly not going into the mikveh. You could say something when a minority of it gets into the mikveh, and the majority doesn't, but you can say there's contact with the waters of the mikveh, and the remainder will not be a chatzitza. But you can't say about something that's completely enveloped that there's no chatzitza here, even if you're not makpid on it. So then what's the answer? When it says, shani ubar, dehainu rivite. An ubar is different because it's really an extension of the ubar. Even though an ubar may not be yerach imo, but imo might be the yerach of the ubar. And that is because where the ubar is his growth, that is his natural habitat. What surrounds him is actually not something that is not a part and parcel of him. It's really an extension of his growth and his sustenance and his nutrition. And because that's all a part of him, what's enveloping him is really just a wider ubar. It's not really that ubar and then he has his mother around him. It's ubar with his environment. And the ubar with his environment, that's not considered to be a chatzitza. Kiata Ravina am Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have a third mesora brought about what Rabbi Yochanan said. We had Rabbi Bar Chano. We had Ravin. Now we have Ravina bringing a statement from Yochanan, which is, Bilmot Halech Achar HaZachar. By the other nations, you go after patrilineal descent. The father dictates, as opposed to Jewish side where it's matrilineal descent. Over here, it's going to be patrilineal descent when it comes to the non-Jewish nations. Nitgairu, once they convert, Halech Achar Pagum Shebishnehem. Once they've converted, then there's no longer patrilineal, matrilineal. It's simply who is the worst of the two. This is a third mesorah that Rabbi Yochanan says. Before, we had one that was suggesting that with regards to the Mitzri, it's matrilineal descent. Then we had the second mesorah which says that it's patrilineal descent with the Mitzri. And then we have this now, the third mesorah, which is irrelevant, which is that as soon as they convert, it's just whoever is the worst of the two. That's what dictates over here. Now, it's true, when they are non-Jews, then it's all patrilineal descent. After conversion, then it goes to the lowest common denominator, basically. Between the male and the female, whoever's worse off, they will dictate the status of the Ubar. So we had Rabbi Bar Chano who says patrilineal descent, the father dictates. We had Rabbi Dimi who said that it's the mother, Mitzri, that determines. And here we say it doesn't matter. It's the mother or the father, whoever is the worst of the two. Umot, alach achar zachar. How do we know by umot you go after the male patrilineal descent? Kedetanya. Minayin lechad min umot shebal knanit. Volid ben. Person has a relationship with a Knanit. The woman is a Knanite woman, but the man is from another nation. Volid ben. Shatara shalik noto be'eved. How do you know that you can buy him as an Eved? And he's not governed by Lotichaye kol neshama. Lotichaye kol neshama applies to the seven nations. Knani is one of the seven nations. Here it's a father is from the outside of the seven nations. The mother is one of the seven nations. That child, what's the status? So here the Gemara is saying the child's fine, because the father is not one of the seven nations. Shinemar. From amongst those that live there, atoshavim, agarim, mechem, mehem, tiknu, you're allowed to buy. So now, over there, the term toshavim means somebody who came to live there. Why is it somebody who came to live there? Because he is from another nation. He's not one of the seven nations. He came to live there. He's not born there. He's not one of the seven nations. He came from the outside. So he's called a toshav. A toshav is an outsider that's settled there. Ger v'toshav anochi mechem, right? That's by Abraham. It says he's a Toshav. He came from the outside, but he settled there. So to over here, he settled in the Eretz Canaan, but he's from the outside, so it's okay. Yochol afilu echad min haknanim shubal achat min haumot, volid ben. What happens if a Canaanite man, but the woman is from the other nations? Sheata rashay leknoto be'ed. Maybe then he's not covered by lo tuchaya kon meshama. Tamlemar sheolidu ba'artzechem. That they were born in the land. Only those that are born in the land, but not those that were living in the land. Living in the land means if the father lived in the land, then he dictates the lineage of the child. So in both cases, the father dictates. If the father is a Knani, the child is problematic. If the father is not a Kenani, then the child is fine. He's not governed by Lo Tichayeh Kol Neshama. And they're playing on the parts of the Pasuk. One says Toshav and one says Ger. So which one is which? So they say Toshav tells you that when the father is from the outside and lives here, it's okay. Talking about a Gar, that he lives here, he is a permanent resident here, then it's problematic. As Rashi describes over here, it follows the woman. They always live where the woman is, which is interesting because that's really not true. In the Gemara already, they go to the husband's family. They don't go to the woman's family. That's like a modern phenomenon where we go to the woman's family or the mother's family dictates. Very possibly. The problem is that by Minyam and Ger Mitzri, there over there it says that he was a Ger Mitzri in the time of Rabbi Akiva. How come over there by the Mitzrim we say that it is problematic and by the Ammonim we say it's not? Tosafot discussed that back on Ayin Vav as to why there's maybe a difference between Mitzrayim and Ammon. But then he says again, when Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed the Mikdash and messed it up, but Rabbi Akiva's after that point. So you have to say that there might be a difference. Mitzrim, he says, there's a promise in Yechezkel, they'll come back to their land, and they're the original Mitzrim, as opposed to other nations which got mixed up. But generally, the answer is yes, that we don't know who anymore, and therefore none of these laws will apply. All right, so now, Rashi says it's all dictated by where the mother lives, and that's what the description is here, because you always move to where the mother is. So the husband moves, the mother stays put. So in the case where the mother is in Eretz Canaan, and then the father moves there, he's a toshav. And he's from the outside, and he's a toshav. And that's when that child is okay. In the other case where it's a garimi machen, means that they live here, but they're not born here. They were born somewhere else. Why? Because the woman was from another nation. And you move by the mother. So if he was lives here, but then he moved over there to have the child, that child is problematic, because that child will be classified as a kanani. So that's the premise of their understanding of the pasuk, is that the husband's always moving to where the woman is. And the woman's giving birth by her nation. And so now it's a question of whether the husband is a ger or a toshav, and that'll make the difference here. So that's number one. We see patrilineal descent by non-Jews. Nitgaru aleichachar pagum shebneihem. My, what's the case? Ilem of mitzri shenasa amunit. If you have a mitzri that married amunit, my pagum shebneihem itba. What is the difference over there? Because it's amuni velo amunit. So she's totally fine. I mean, there's no pagum here at all. If you want to say we have a pagum here, so you have a mitzri male and amunit female. The Ammonit is not a pagum. She's kasher the gamre. She's allowed to join the cow. Ela b'amoni shenasa mitzrit. The case where the Ammoni marries a mitzrit. Izachar havi. If they give birth to a male child, if they have a child that's a male, shad yabat ammoni. We're going to make him into an Ammoni because that's the worst of the two. In that case, if we make him into a mitzrit, if we say that he's a mitzrit, then in the third generation he'll be cleared. If we make him into an Ammoni, then he's forever stuck. So that's the worst of the two scenarios over there, for him to be an Ammoni. If they have a child that is a female, Shadjabat or Mitzrit, we're going to make her into a Mitzrit. Because if we make her into an Ammonit, she'll be Muteret right away. If she's a Mitzrit, she'll have to wait for another generation. I mean, this will already be a second generation Mitzrit. It'll be a third generation Mitzrit. So here, you take the worst of the two scenarios, will apply, which will be interesting here. It's actually a wild thing that the children that are born from this marriage, the brother and sister will have a different status. One will have a status of an Ammoni, the brother, and the sister will have a status of a Mitzrit. And one of them, the sister, will eventually be Muteret to join the cow. The brother will never be Mutar to join the cow. So it's an interesting phenomenon, but that's what it means. Go after the Pasul Sheben. Then when you have two Psulim, you go after whatever produces the worst outcome. All right, next Mishnah. Mamzerim v'nitinin asurin v'isuran isur olam echad zecharim v'echad nekevot. Mamzer, which we've learned already, because mumzar, at zachar nekeva, are asurin. Nitinim, which are from the givonim that converted through trickery in the time of Yoshua, they are also problematic to join Klal Yisrael, and that applies to men and women. Male, female, doesn't make a difference. So that's the Mishnah statement. Amar Ish Lakish, mamzeret achar asara dorot muteret. A mamzeret after 10 generations is mutar to join Klal Yisrael, because the pasuk says, Ador Asiri, a female, a mamzeret, after 10 generations will be mutarot. Yolif Asiri Asiri Ma'amoni Umoavi. We're going to let out 10 from the Ammoni Umoavi. Malala Nikevot Mutarot. Avka Nikevot Mutarot. Just like we learned that by the 10 generations by the Ammoni Umoavi, the females are fine. So to over here, by a mamzeret, after the 10th generation, the females will be fine. Where it says, Ima Lahala Miyad. In the case of Ammoni Umoavi, the women are mutarot right away. Avka miyad. So now you're going to say, Zindim by a mamzeret, she should be muteret right away. Kihani gzeret shava miyasiri velech. Gzeirah Shuv is only good from 10th generation and onward, because that's where you get the Gzeirah Shuv. The Gzeirah Shuv is from Asiri Asiri. The fact that you have a Gzeirah Shuv Asiri Asiri says that the application of what you learn from Amoni Amovi only applies to beyond the 10th generation. So beyond the 10th generation, we're going to bring in the din of Amoni and Moavi. The din of Amoni and Moavi is that there's a bifurcation between male and female. So that's what's going to happen. After the 10th generation of Mamzer, we're going to bifurcate the din and say males will remain problematic. They'll be Mamzerim. But Mamzerot will be fine at that point. Where it says, Vanantznan, our Mishnah, Mamzerim, Nitinim, Asurim, Visuran, Visur Olam, Echad Zecharim, Echad Nekevot. Our Mishnah makes no differentiation between 10th generation, not 10th generation, no differentiation between male and female. It's all the same din. So how can you make a statement like that? Our Mishnah is against it. Where it says, Lokasha, Hakaman Damar Don Mina Umina, Hakaman Damar Don Mina Buke Batra. This is a principle, Machloket, in the Gemara in Chulin. That what is the status of Gzeirah Shavah? When you make a Gzeirah Shavah, do you pluck information from the Gzeirah Shavah, bring it back to the location which you are learning for, and then you put it in the framework of that which is in that location? Or, when you learn the Gzeirah Shavah, you take all the information from the Gzeirah Shavah and it teaches you everything. So over here, that's going to be the case. If you say, don mina o mina, if you say we learn out from Amoni and Moavi, that's Gzeirah Shavah, that's where we learn from, then we're going to take everything from it. Now, when the Gzeirah Shavah says, take Amoni and Moavi, teach you that Dor Asiri does not mean Dor Asiri. Dor Asiri means Adolam. Because by Amoni and Moavi, it says Dor Asiri Adolam. So there it teaches you that's forever. Dor Asiri really means forever. So the Gzeirah Shavah says, take Dor Asiri by Amoni and Moavi and bring it over to Mamzer. You know what Dor Asiri means by Mamzer? Forever. Okay, that's the Gzeirah Shavah. Now, do I also take more information from Amoni and Moavi? Do I take it Domi Na Umi Na? I take everything. From learning from Amoni and Moavi, it means forever. I also got to take all that comes with it. You know what comes with it? There's a bifurcation between male and female. So I got to learn. That's what Reish Lakish is saying. That Gzeirah Shavah is basically saying Dor Asiri means Adolam. But the Adolam of Amoni and Moavi bifurcates between male and female. So too by Mamzer and Mamzer. That's going to be the din. Or do I say Haman Amar Domina Buki Be'atra, which means what din? I'm trying to learn the din of Adolam. So I take the din of Adolam and now I bring it back to Mamzer and Mamzeret. Then I say, okay, put it in the framework of Mamzer and Mamzeret. No differentiation between male and female. That continues in forever. So our Mishnah will be following the opinion, which is Domina Buki Be'atra. Whereas Reish Lakish will be following the position, which is Domino Mina, which is everything comes from Amoni and Moavi, and just like you learn out Adolam from there, you're also going to learn out that there's a bifurcation between male and female. Now, the Gemara says, Shalu et Rabbi Eliezer, Mamzeret achar asara dare, Mamzeret after 10 generations, Mahu, what's her status? So he answers to them in a circumspect manner, which is, Amar lehem, mitein li dor shlishiva terenu. Find me a third generation Mamzeret, and I'll be mitaher this. Alma kasavar, Mamzera lo chayi. Basically, what Rabbi Eliezer is suggesting is that Mamzerim don't last. They die out. They don't last very long. So you're talking about Dor Asiri, they're never going to make it to Dor Asiri. They can't even make it to a third generation. Now they're going to make it to a 10th generation. Now, as Tosfot points out, Rabbi Eliezer l'shitato, the machloket in Chulin is between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. That machloket, Rabbi Eliezer has opinion in Don Mina Bukhi Biyashu Don Mina Mina, which is that Rabbi Eliezer believes Don Mina Mina. And therefore, he would have held like Reish Lakish. And he would have said the 10th generation is mutar. That's not what he answers. He says, "Velo ratzal levarer lahem tshuvato." He didn't want to give them their answer. Shkenei adarkol litchot atzmo min ha-shualim. That was Rabbi Lezer's general approach to things, is that when people ask him questions, he used to push them away because he only quoted things that he had heard from his Rebbe. So Rabbi Lezer just said, you know, push them away with this. Find me a third generation mamzeret, and then we'll talk about a 10th generation mamzeret. The truth is, but Tosfos says, l'shitato, Rabbi Eliezer would come out that it would be okay, that a Mamzeret after the 10th generation, like Reish Lakish, would have been fine, because his position is, don mina umina. He's the author of that position. V'chein amar Ravuna, Mamzera lo chayi. Ravuna also says that when it comes to a Mamzeret, she doesn't live. Vat nan Mamzerin asurin b'isuran yisur olam. Our mission says that they're asur forever. Why bother telling me yisur olam if they're not going to make it anywhere? So Amr Abizera Lidi Mefarshali Mine de Rabbi Yehuda. I had this explained to me what Rabbi Yehuda says. Diyadiya Chaye, Delo Yadiya Lo Chaye. If they're known as Mamzerim, they will live. Delo Yadiya Lo Chaye. If they're not known, then they don't live. Diyadiya Velo Yadiya. If they're kind of known, meaning that it's not well known, but it's kind of known, Adlat Adari Chaye, They live for three generations. Tvei lo chayei. After that, they don't live. So if they're well known as Mamzerim, then they can go on forever because they won't get mixed up with Klal Yisrael. It's clear, they're defined, they're delineated as being Mamzerim, and not going to have a problem in intermarrying within Klal Yisrael. So there, they can live forever. If they're not known, they won't make it past that generation because Hashem doesn't want the Mamzerim getting mixed up in Klal Yisrael. So they'll die out early, they won't have any connection to Klal Yisrael at all because they'll die out right away. If it's the Diyah below Yediyah, which is people have a sense that this person is a Mamzer, like a Safek Mamzer, then they'll be careful with them. They'll be careful with their children and their grandchildren because they're still alive. Three generations is still within the purview of those that knew the grandparent that was a Safek Mamzer. Once you get beyond that, it's going to be forgotten that that family had a Mamzerus in it, and therefore they only last for three generations. After that, Hashem won't let it go because otherwise you'll get Mamzerim getting mixed in Klal Yisrael. So how old Avi B'Shivutei, the Rabbi Ami? There was this individual lived in the neighborhood, Rabbi Ami's neighborhood. Achriz alei de Mamzer Avil. He just announced that this guy was a Mamzer. Bochi Vazil. He was crying away that Rabbi Ami made him into a Mamzer. Maybe he was a Mamzer, but he didn't want everybody to know that he was a Mamzer. And here, Rabbi Ami made it public. Samalei. Rabbi Ami says to this guy, stop crying. Chaim natat lecha. I just gave you life. Because if you had continued with this hidden peace that you were a Mamzer, you were going to die because nobody knew you were a Mamzer. Now that I announced you're a Mamzer, you got long life now because now we don't have to worry about you dying out. Everybody knows you're a Mamzer. Amar Rav Chana Barado, Nitinim David Gazar Lehem. The Nitinim, who are these descendants of the Gibonim, was a gzera from David HaMelech not to join Klal Yisrael. Meaning that Gibonim, once they converted, were allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael Midoraita. But David was gozer that they could no longer join Klal Yisrael because of an incident that we're going to explain right now. But that means that Midoraita, on a Doraita level, the Nitinim, Givonim are fine. It's all Gzera Drabanan. Again, we saw that in last week's Daf, with regards to the fact that Nitinim were only a Din Drabanan. We were talking about the Kohen, Tzuadaka, that was trying to marry a Givoni or a Nitin. What was the status there? Were they a Mutar Levo Bakal? Not Mutar Levo Bakal, was an Isidore Drabanan, an Isidore Doraita. But here the Gemara makes it clear that it's not an Isidore, right? That's a Gzera or Takanat Rabbanan from the time of David HaMelech, which means it's very Kadum. It's a very early Gzera. Shinemar, Vayikra Melech the Givonim. Vayomar Alehem. Vagivonim, lo mi b'nei Yisrael hema. So Melech calls the Givonim, and he calls the Givonim, the B'nei Givonim are not part of B'nei Yisrael. Mai ta'ima gozer alayu. Why was David gozer on them that they're not part of Klal Yisrael? Dichtiv, because it says towards the end of David's life, Vayi Rab Yimei David, Shlosh Shanim, Shana achar shana. So they had a famine in the days of David. Year after year, they had a famine for 3 years. Shana rishona amar lehem, shema uvde avodat kochavim yesh bechem. Maybe it's because we're worshipping Avodah Zarah. That's why there's a famine, dichtiv, because it says in Vayayim Shema, vavadtem Elohim acherim, vishtachavitim lehem, vatsarat ha-shamayim luyeh matar. So the reason we're having a famine here is because you're worshipping Avodah Zarah. Badku v'lo matzu. They checked, and there was nobody worshipping Avodah Zarah. That can't be the explanation. Shnia, the second year they had a famine. Maybe we have violators here. Usually when the Gemara says Ovrei Aveira, it means Arayot. It's a problem of Arayot here. Dichtiv. Vayimanu revivim umalkosh lo aya umetzach isha zona ayalach. That vayimanu revivim, the rains and the clouds were withheld, umalkosh lo aya, and there was no rain. Why? Because metzach isha zona yalach. You had brazen face like a zona. But it means that the znot, the problem of znot or arayot, it stops the rain from coming. That's why we have a famine. But kovelo matzu, again they checked and they didn't find anything wrong. Shlishit amar lehem shema poskitz dakab rabim yesh bechem en nodim. Maybe we have people who are pledging publicly to give money and they do not fulfill their pledges. Dichtiv, nisim viruach v'geshem ayin. The clouds are coming. And the wind is coming. Vageshem ayin. Meaning it has all the trappings of a storm, yet it never leaves any rain. Ish mitalel b'matat sheker. That is like a person who takes praise in gifts that are false. That the person in public makes all these pledges and makes all these promises, but when it comes down to the bottom line, he doesn't do it. So the Hashem punishes that midah keneged midah with all the fury and the trappings of a storm that doesn't bring rain. It's the same thing. Lots of promise, but no delivery. That's what it is. Storm without rain is promise without delivery. And so to over here, these are people pledging tzedakah, not giving it. But kubalo matzu. They checked again, didn't find that was a problem. Amar ein adar v'atzvui elabi. says that it's got to be something to do with me. I got to deal with this now. So it's interesting that they waited 3 years. I guess they found, they thought they had the conditions, they knew there were reasons for this. But after the third year, they decide that maybe they got to check into this. Miyad, vayivakesh David et pnei Hashem. Then he asks Hashem. Asking Hashem means the Urim v'Tumim. My he amar Rishlokesh shal b'Urim v'Tumim. He asked him to him. My mashma, how do you know that Mashal pnei Hashem is talking about the Urim v'Tumim? I'm Rabbi Lozer. Atche pnei pnei. Tivach vayivakesh David et pnei Hashem. Tivhata Mashal ob mishpat Urim lifnei Hashem. So he said pnei and lifnei. So those are gzeir shava to teach you. Just like over there, Lifnei Hashem refers to the Urim V'Tumim. Also here, when David is Mevakesh Pnei Hashem, means that he's asking the Urim V'Tumim for information. V'yomer Hashem El Shaul Ve'El Beit Adamim Asher Helmite Givonim El Shaul. So what does that mean? El Shaul. That's number one. And then El Beit Adamim Asher Helmite Givonim. Sounds like there are two things that went wrong over here. So Gemara says, El Shaul is Shaloni Sped Kalacha. The Shaul did not get a proper eulogy. V'El Beit Adamim that he killed out the Givonim. Now the Gemara is going to discuss this, and again, we're going to continue way into tomorrow's daf with this. Shaul was lo nispeid kalacha is not so simple, because we know David HaMelech gives an extensive eulogy for Shaul HaMelech, number one. Number two is he actually goes out and they bring back the bones of Shaul and Yonatan later on, and they bury them properly. I mean, he doesn't do it, but those people from Yavesh Gilad took care of the bodies of Shaul and Yonatan and brought them back from the Plishtim, so they're not bizui. Here you have, pretty straightforward, that there was a eulogy, they were buried, they were taken care of. So what you have to say is, Shaul nispeid halacha means, it wasn't ra'ui for Melech Yisrael. David gives a personal eulogy. It's not a part of all of Klal Yisrael. They did not mourn him properly as a Klal or Yisrael as a whole. I mean, David may have given a small eulogy for him, and it's an emotional eulogy for Shaul and Yonatan, but nevertheless, it wasn't done like a state funeral, which should have been. It should have been a state funeral, and that's not what happens over here. David does take care of them, but he takes care of them on a personal level. Doesn't take care of them on a national level, and that's what the problem is. Now the Gemara is going to address the other half, which is El Beit HaDamim Sheimita Givonim V'Yechen Matzino Shaul Sheimita Givonim. We never find anywhere that Shaul killed the Givonim. Elamitok Shareg Nov Irakonim. He wiped out the city of Nov. That we do know, because when he's chasing down David, and Doeg Adomi tells them that they gave refuge to David, Shaul gets very mad and kills out the whole Nov Ir HaKohanim. Sheyu Maspikim Lahem Mayim U'Mazon. They were supplying food and bread to the Givonim. Malei Aleha V'Katuv Kilo Argon. It's as if you killed them. The Kohanim used the Givonim. That is because Yoshua assigned the Givonim to be Chotvei Tzim and Shovei Mayim. They were the woodcutters and the water drawers. So they used to work with the Kohanim to provide wood for the Kohanim and for the Mishkan. And they also provided water for the Kohanim and for the Mishkan. So their job was connected to the Mishkan or the Mikdash, in the sense that they were the woodcutters or the water carriers. So because of that, they were connected to the Kohanim in Nov, Yira Kohanim. So after Shaul wipes out the Kohanim in Nov, their whole parnasa goes away because the Kohanim are no longer there. They were deriving their parnasa from Nov Yerkohanim. He wipes out Nov. It's as if he killed them as well. He killed the people of Nov, clearly. But he also killed, in a sense, figuratively, he killed the Givonim because he took away their parnasa. This is the view of the Bavli. It happens to be that in Yushalmi, it says that while he was killing Nov Yerkohanim, he happened to kill 7 Givonim that were mixed up in the group of Kohanim there, because they were working there, so they also got killed, so that he actually did kill the Givonim according to the Yushalmi. Not that it was a derivative of his killing Nov Yerkohanim, that the Givonim were affected. So Katava El Shaul Shaloni Sped Kalacha V'Katava L'Asher Yimit HaGivonim. Wait, these seem to be mutually exclusive. It's being Toveya for Shaul's Kavod, and then it incriminates Shaul. So here in the same statement it says, you didn't take care of Shaul, you didn't give him a Hespeh properly. And then it also says in the same breath, it says, and Shaul did this, and he's now incriminated. He's guilty of killing the Givonim. It's mutually exclusive. How could you add these two things together in one statement? So Gemara says, yeah, you're right. In the Da'amar Reish Lakish, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk, Bakshu et Hashem kol anvei aretz, arsher mishpato pa'alu. Says that you, Bakshu et Hashem, they should search out Hashem kol anvei aretz, all of those that are humble, those that have humility, Asher Mishpato Palu, that they did his bidding. They do the word, they follow the law of God. Asher Mishpato Sham Palu. So that whenever there is a mishpat, there's din, shampalu, you raise the other things that are about them, or you raise their zchuyot, basically, which is exactly what happens here. They go to incriminate Shaul, so they're looking into his whole book. When they open up the book to say there's mishpat for Shaul, they also see that there were other things where he had zchuyot that were not covered. So it looks into the book and says, look, he's guilty of what he did with the Gibonim. But while we're looking at the book, we also say, wait a minute, he's owed something because he didn't have a proper hespate. So when they look into it, they look across the board and they say, okay, yes, there's a problem here, but there's also this good thing here, and that's why they come together. B'mishpato, when there's mishpat, shampalu, they note everything. Note everything means even the good things. They look into everything. They maskirin po'el tzidkotav. They also mention things that he did when he was righteous. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line of Ayin Chet Amud Bet, because then the Gemara is going to continue discussing about the problem of the Givonim and how they dealt with the Givonim and how the Givonim were problematic. And because of that, David was gozer on them that they shouldn't join Klal Yisrael. This is all part of how we know that the Takanat Givonim not to join Klal Yisrael is from David HaMelech that goes into the story that continues here on Daf Ayin Tet Amud Aleph.